welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil. Hello, sir.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hello, sir.
Hello.
Happy day to you. Happy season three finale day.
Oh, my God. I can only think of a song by Europe. The final countdown.
I am wearing our series finale hat in honor of the season three final episode because we talked about it, I think, last time.
And yes.
This is the Star Trek Voyager crew hat, which... let me pull it off. See my hat head. Where is my hat head? Let's fix
it. Well, our listeners can't see your hat head, but yeah, for those of you who are listening, have hat head. He's got hat head.
I totally do.
Mm-hmm. Could be bed head.
It could be, except I've been on a hike and I've been up and it's been a busy day. But okay. This is our Star Trek Voyager season 7, and it says Fini on the back. And the cast made these for the crew. We were talking about it last week.
Mm-hmm. The cast. Are you sure you made them? You said that you made them. Right?
I didn't physically sew them.
Well, I know,
but
no, you didn't physically.
Like whoever
I thought that I had made them, but then in our conversation earlier, you said that you're the one that put the order in. So maybe I don't know.
I think I did. I think I put an order in through. I can't remember who, somebody on the crew, maybe in the props department, like, I don't know,
yeah,
Alan Sims or Charlie Russo or something. They'd made hats before, and I think I used their vendor.
Okay. Something. That makes sense. Well, can I ask you a question, please?
Yes.
Where have you stored that hat? It is so crunchy.
It's kind of crunched up over here. Yeah. It's been moved around a lot. Okay. You know, it's been 26 years.
Guys. All right. So that's 26 years of storage. And somehow, yes, somewhere, it got a little crunchy.
It's been crushed.
Okay. All
right. But like I said, I think I remember finding a box on my last move.
Yeah.
A random box of hats that were extras that we had gotten. And, you know, in case people, you know, weren't on the list or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got to find that box of hats. I don't know.
And I too seem to recall a box of hats as well.
I know.
I need to look for my box of hats.
Maybe everybody has a box of hats. Maybe we gave all the cast, because the cast bought these hats for the crew and stuff. So maybe part of the deal was we got an extra box each or something.
I hope we remember that correctly.
I hope we can find them.
Yes, I look forward to looking. I look forward to looking for I'm a little discombobulated. I had 3.5 hours of dental work yesterday, so I'm a little
How's it looking?
It's okay, you know. It's a temporary good. Right now it's temporary though, and so they gotta make
the crown,
the actual permanent crown has to be fabricated by a technician who is very, very good. This individual has been doing it for about 17 years. So the technician was at the dentist yesterday to look at the coloring and everything of the other tooth that's still there. Yes. His name is George. So I did a whole funny bit where I said, well, wouldn't it be funny if I was a different Asian Star Trek actor that was here in the chair and I happened to be George Takei, and I would be saying, George, I'm so happy to be trusting you to be fabricating my crown. And so I was saying a George to George message. So I made the guy laugh. Yeah,
nice.
It was always good
to make people laugh.
It is. It is. Yes. And you know, when I was singing the final countdown earlier, that wasn't about the final countdown to the last episode of third season. That was the final countdown to the end of my limericks. That's what I'm trying to say. That's why I
ventured
into that territory. Yes.
Yes.
I can't believe it. You know what? I may, since this is Scorpion part one, I may extend myself to number two, or it'd be kind of cool to see how what you come up with.
Sure.
With number two, right? Well, so I'm not.
You
I'm
said
not
number
entitled.
Two. Uh-huh. He said number two.
I did say
that. That makes me laugh. Okay, I am 12 years old.
Well, let's stay on that 12-year-old vibe. Yes. And every time I talk about the episode that you filmed on TNG,
yes,
I turn 12 as well. Aww. First duty, because it sounds so much like, because yes. I said duty.
You said duty.
Yeah.
Get the giggles. Okay.
All righty.
I like that character.
Yes.
I like that kind of embarrassed little kid character.
Nick is a funny Licarno. Guy. He's all about duty.
Duty. Okay.
Enough okay. In all seriousness.
Yes.
So I have the option to do Scorpion Part 2 Limerick, but I'm yes. not. I'm, I but don't I'm not have
gonna,
to. You're not going to hold
gonna,
me to it,
I'm
right?
I'm going
to
cover it. I'm going to yeah, cover okay. it. I got it. I got this. And,
all right. Get to yeah. know. Good okay. to know. Okay.
So here we go.
Here we go. Here we go, guys.
Let's go watch the finale from season three.
Scorpion Part 1.
Very excited.
Hey, everyone. We are back from watching Scorpion.
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That was a... Oof. That was huge.
Yeah.
It was a huge episode.
Lot going on. Lot yeah. going on. Okay, let's just jump right into it. Let's start with your haiku synopsis.
Okay, my haiku synopsis, and I don't think it's called, by the way, Scorpion Part 1. I think it's just called Scorpion, and then the next one is Scorpion Part 2.
Oh.
I don't think it's technically, it's not titled Scorpion Part 1. It's just called titled Scorpion.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
So what is your haiku for Scorpion?
Here's my haiku for Scorpion. Voyager meets Borg. 8472 are worse. Run. Fight, watch part two. There you go.
Love it. So cryptic. Yes. Okay. I think we're on the same wavelength because my limerick synopsis is kind of like that too.
Similar.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Similar. All right. Here we go. My limerick for Scorpion. We're at the edge of Borg space. What to do? But they're no match for 8472. A deal is proposed. Borg planet disposed. Will Voyager survive? We have no clue.
Exactly. We're on the same page.
We're on the same page.
We're totally yeah. on the same page.
All right. Written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky. Directed by David Livingston. Opening yeah. shot. Opening shot is huge because, you know, we see these two Borg cubes and we hear the Borg saying, you are about to be assimilated, blah, blah, blah. And then they are summarily destroyed, both of them, as if they were nothing.
Yeah.
And then that, so that sets up this whole episode.
That's right all there. You need to know right now. That's yeah. all you need to know. Yeah. The Borg are not invincible.
No.
Somebody off camera is scarier.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, we go. It's one shot, one moment in space with the Borg cubes being defiant and getting destroyed. And we go to the credits.
Yeah.
So it's a very provocative opening for sure. Feels very different than a typical episode.
Yeah, but when and that's a short teaser, though, right? You would say that's a really short. Compared to what we're used to seeing.
Oh, sometimes that's we'll probably five minutes before the credits.
Oh yeah, maybe even longer. I've seen it right, but this is like a little minute fraction of a teaser, right? But that's all you need. It says a lot.
We need. And you expect to come back from the credits and see what happened, and instead, we're in Leonardo da Vinci's workshop.
Yes, we are.
Which, by the way, I got to say. I loved that set. We did, you know, we didn't often do period sets. I mean, I guess we did for the romance novel and we've done Sandrines. We've done a few, but I just feel like this one was super cool. And
yeah,
I feel like Janeway doing a Da Vinci holodeck program is so infinitely much better than a romance novel. Like, why didn't we do this way back when?
Yeah.
To have her going to Da Vinci for advice or inspiration or trying to figure out a problem or just for fun, that would have been such a great ongoing holodeck program.
You know, maybe they wanted to do this earlier, but John Rhys Davies wasn't available. Maybe they had in their head, hey, he's going to be great for it, which he was. He was absolutely wonderful.
He was great, but I got to say, in the beginning of this scene, he's speaking with this Italian accent, and it was hard for me to understand what he was saying. I got to
really,
yeah, I made a note of that. I'm like, I can't
of
his words.
Okay,
it got better once he got into the dialogue back and forth with Janeway. It was much easier, but when he had his opening monologue,
yeah,
I was like, what? What is he saying?
Anyway, I didn't have that problem. I it was pretty clear to me. But then again, maybe because I speak multiple languages, I can kind of hear that better than you can.
Dig through the accent.
Yeah. Huh. All right. Yeah. Good to know. Good to know. But you do agree with his casting, though, right? You do like the casting. Okay.
He's great.
Yeah.
And she asked if she can work with him in the workshop. Can she have a little space just to hang out? And he's like, nope. Sorry. Like my solitude. Nope. Yeah. Can't stay. Yeah. And then he shows off this robot arm, which I thought was a cool prop.
Yeah.
I wonder if we built that prop, or a lot of times these kind of props are rented from like rental houses in town. And I wonder if they just said, oh, let's have him working on something and go tell us what we can rent, because it'd be expensive to build this. What can we rent? And then we'll write that. So they found a robot arm. I bet that's how that happened.
That makes sense, right? Find the prop first and then write around it, which is the easier way to do it.
It's not that important what he's doing. He's just got to be doing something cool and ahead of his time. And
yeah,
so, yeah, he works on that. And then Janeway kind of wanders off and sees, by the way, he's working on the robot arm and it breaks.
Yeah.
Got to pull it apart. And he's like, I got to fix it. And he's working like wooden cogs. Like it's all of wood.
That's right.
The robot arm.
Yeah.
But she's wandering around and sees these wings hanging up high.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this moment where she's like, oh, that looks like you've designed it after a bat or
a sparrow. Was the
sparrow or a bat. She said, what about a hawk?
Yes. What if you base your flying machine on a hawk?
On a hawk. And all of a sudden he's inspired.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yes, I get it. Yeah. So now once she suggests this hawk, he likes it. So he invites her to stay because now she's got good ideas. So
yeah, she can have her corner, but he has to pay. He goes, you have to pay me 10, whatever the amount, the denomination. And she goes 7. So she's negotiating already. Yeah, that, you know, her monthly rent is only going to be 7. So he agrees. He agrees.
Yeah. And she gets a call from Chakotay. She's needed on the bridge. And we head up on the bridge. And B'Elanna says that the probe that they sent ahead of them to scan the space that we're heading into has stopped responding.
Stop transmitting. Yeah, that's
right. Transmitting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no more signal from this probe, and it's very strange.
And this was 2 months ago. That's what they said. It's a long range probe. So 2 months ago it was sent out, and or longer than that. Excuse me. It was 2 months ago. It stopped transmitting. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And so then we know that from that little graphic, we see a little tiny slip, a little tiny slither of video footage of from the probe, which shows, guess what? One of our Borg drones kind of investigating it. So now we know. Mm-hmm. We're entering into Borg space.
Yeah. And David Livingston, I made a note, he did a nice 180 that pushes into a Janeway close up there.
Oh yeah.
And I did notice in this episode that David Livingston was directing a little differently than he normally does. It wasn't just these like static, still, you know, wide lenses on people's faces, but he was moving people around a little more.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely stepping out of his comfort zone, which I thought was really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we go into the briefing room next, and Janeway says, we're in Borg space.
Right. We're there. We're right there. Everyone get ready. And then she's essentially just, we're talking about a corridor that has zero Borg activity, which
Chakotay calls it the Northwest Passage. Mm-hmm. And he gets up and starts to say, so you see a little teamwork here with Janeway and Chakotay, which I thought was nice. Like here's the bad news, Janeway says, but Chakotay is going to tell you the good news. So clearly they've talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's this one weird like section of space right in the middle of all surrounded by Borg, but this one clear area that seems totally clear. And if we can navigate this, we should be able to go through Borg space without ever encountering them, which would be incredible.
Yeah. And the reason why it's clear, or at least what we think the reason is it's Torres that says it's filled with intense gravimetric distortions. So that's why the Borg cubes aren't traveling there. But later we learn that's because that's where the singularities are opening up, basically. So that is not the reason why the Borg are not going there. They're being destroyed, but we don't know that yet.
We don't know that yet.
And Janeway gives a great pep talk. She gives a great pep talk.
By the way, when Chakotay says, he calls it the Northwest Passage.
Yeah.
And Paris has a line where I say, better to ride the rapids than face the hive.
Oh, yes. Look at your big line
there. I paused
that
for a minute and I was like, what? I don't get that. I don't think I even got it when I acted that line. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Better to ride the rapids than face the hive. I guess.
Yeah, they're saying.
Gravimetric distortions in this path.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a rough ride.
That's right.
But the hive is like the Borg. I don't know.
The hive is the Borg collective.
It was weird. I didn't like that one.
Well, that made sense to me. So I'm going to be the contrarian opinion there. That was fine to me. It didn't seem out of the blue.
I mean, it makes sense. It's just a weird. It's
a weird phrase, right?
It's a weird phrase. Yeah.
Okay.
It was one of those classic, like, oh, let's give Paris like a down to earth response. You know, he's going to. Yeah. Plain speak this moment, and it was
he's going to 20th century speak this moment.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, nah, that was not a great 20th century.
Yeah, no worry. Noted.
Yeah, noted. But they check with all the departments. They check with Harry about engines and the warp engines and stuff. They check with Tuvok about weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
they check with a doctor about the Borg autopsy.
But before that happens, there is after the pep talk, we go into the montage. And it's the montage jumps between engineering, the corridor, the bridge, engineering, the montage of preparation. Then we land in sickbay. And then you're about to say, the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. So the doctor is now, and by the way, in that montage, Sue Henley had a line. Did you notice that?
No, she didn't. Yeah,
Janeway stand in Sue Henley, when they're walking in the hallway, she had a line. I forget what the line was, but I was like, yay, she's got a line.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that her second line or is that her?
I think so.
Yeah, because she was in a corridor or a turbo lift before.
Turbo lift,
she had the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a Darkling. That's when he was the evil doctor and in the back. Okay.
Yeah. And she had a little line in this. She was talking to somebody about, is this ready? Or something.
Oh, good for Sue. Good for Sue. Yeah.
So in sick bay, the doc is dissecting this Borg and he talks about these tubules. Are the first step in assimilation is how he starts, to describe.
He's coming up with solutions of how to stop or combat this Borg assimilation process, right?
Yeah.
And in the midst of this, that's when Kes has this crazy vision of mangled Borg bodies. That's the first time her mental skills, would you call them skills?
Telepathy.
Yeah, her mental properties or whatever, her telepathic properties pick up, this vision of mangled.
Well, this is the first time we see it, but later on, I'll come back to that because later on she talks about it again. Mm-hmm. This is the first time, though, we see it. And she drops a tray and she has this telepathic flash of the dead Borg. And
the tray's later. The tray's when Harry gets about to get hit. Then she drops a tray.
Oh, is that when that happens?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because that's when she's like, she's like, drops
the tray in that one.
She's not going to drop a tray if no one's going to die on Voyager. But whenever, when Harry's in trouble, that's when she drops it. Okay.
Yeah. But she starts having these flashes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we go to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuvok is telling Janeway that she's having these telepathic flashes of dead Borg. She's been having them for a couple hours, these visions.
Mm-hmm.
And she has now seen the destruction of Voyager.
Yes.
It's one of the visions she had.
Yes, that is interrupted by Harry detecting transwarp signatures. And then we go to engineering, where we realize we have dropped out of warp due to an inability to maintain a stable warp field for some reason. There is all type of interference. So then we jump back to the bridge.
And by the way, before we jump back to the bridge, we're in engineering and then there's a big shake.
Yeah.
And B'Elanna gives a big shake.
Yeah.
And then we come back to the bridge and there's more shaking happening, mm-hmm. but it doesn't match Roxanne Dawson's shake.
Oh.
Like, we're not shaking on the bridge. And I just thought when I saw this, I'm like, oh yeah, this happens now and then. Like when we shoot scenes cutting back and forth that have shakes in one set and another set, you do them on different days. Sometimes you forget to match exactly the shaking. And that was a moment where I was like, oh, we probably shot the bridge on one day and engineering on another day. And they just went bigger on the engineering side, but they should have matched it because it, that, that bumped for me.
Huh. Yeah, that is a good observation. But you could also justify it saying that cutting to engineering, her big shake is the actual moment that the warp field destabilizes and pulls us out of warp. So you
and then we're
can,
just
yeah, and then we're kind of less shaky when we come back to the bridge. That's possible. Constant. Yes, but now Harry's has that big line. You know the line that Beltran has always made fun of me for many, many years.
No, which one?
Where he goes, Captain.
Oh yes,
that I'm one, reading yes. One Borg cube, two.
That was three. The one.
Well, but this is it. But if you listen to me, I don't even say it that way. I say Captain. Like that, I don't go, Captain. I don't draw it out at all.
Signatures, and they're coming in fast, and they're doing this, and it's gonna get bad. And
I didn't do any of that.
That's how Beltran's
impersonation.
He does this sort of like it's always going up.
He goes higher. Yeah, it's just it's so comical and it's so funny. But it's and if this is indeed what he was making fun of, that's not even close to how I said it. I'm so that's about business.
That's part of the bit of making fun of people is take a little teeny something and you just
extrapolate on that. Okay, I get it. But this may not be the moment, but I kind of feel like it because maybe it could have happened in the final episode when we're dealing with the Borg. Who knows? You know,
I don't know.
In this one, I'm pretty normal.
It's right? The one where you say, I see a Borg cube approaching, one, two, three, 15 vessels. Yeah.
Yes. Well, this is where that's it is. I think this is it.
That's funny.
So we get scanned by the final Borg cube. The 15th Borg cube stops.
They fly past us. And then the guy in the back stops to scan us for a second.
Yeah. Janeway has that great line, think good thoughts. And we're like, oh God, you know, which is pretty funny, you know, that she's going to say that during the scan when we're about to die, basically. But of course, the Borg cube doesn't do anything. It's just like, okay, good, later, and leaves. So, you know, we survive.
There is a shot in space of Voyager from the side with the Borg cubes flying past. And it's one of those times where, you know, I know this was like the mid 90s and CG was not as good as it is now.
Not as cheap.
It was much more expensive and not as good.
Yes.
And the TVs that most people watched on were not HD TVs. They weren't high def, you know, standard definition.
Yeah, there was no 4K or 8K, whatever they're up to now, whatever resolution.
Mm-hmm. But that one shot of the ship looked pretty bad to me when the
Borg the Borg cube kind of moves out of the way. You didn't like it so much. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And it was mixed in because they did use some of the ship shots, the space shots of Voyager that were filmed on a model, a physical model, what they used to do with the ship models.
Yeah.
And those were big models, by the way. I think the model of Voyager was like, I'm sure there's fans that know better than me, but I feel like it was like 10 feet long.
Yeah. Pretty big.
Mm-hmm. It was big.
Yeah. I agree.
But when they did the CG version of the ship, I just thought the resolution wasn't quite there yet. So.
But for 1997 or 98, not bad.
It was good for them. But it's funny to look at it now and you kind of go, all right.
Janeway's ready room. So Janeway has been studying the personal log entries of all the captains who have ever encountered the Borg. And out of all those people that she's talking about, I found what was most interesting when she quotes Captain Amosov. And I'm thinking, this has got to be a tribute to the sci-fi writer Isaac Asimov. It has to be. Like, why Asimov? It's too close to Isaac Asimov, the renowned sci-fi writer. And they just switched a couple of words. They toggled it around. They said Captain Amosov.
That's interesting. Yeah. That didn't occur to me at all.
Not to you. This is stuff. That's why we do this show together. So I can pull stuff out and you can find stuff out.
Did you notice when Chakotay walked in the ready room and he said, we're running a sensor sweep.
Yes.
He said sensor, like Tuvok says sensor.
I reacted to that in my video reaction. I go, oh my God, here's another person who speaks like Tuvok. Instead of sensor, it's sensor, like S-O-R-E. I have a sore on my arm. Yes. And every time that Tuvok says that, or now Chakotay saying that, I think about a sore, a physical sore on somebody's part of their body. And it kind of pulls me out.
And it's just kind of a sensor.
It's a sensitive topic to talk about. Sensors. Yes.
But Chakotay says the Northwest Passage looks pretty clear of Borg. Yeah. That looks like a good solution. And mm-hmm. she reads Picard's quotes and Amazov's quotes. And mm-hmm. And then Chakotay says something like, oh, you sounded kind of like them. Like you, mm-hmm. he laughs and she's like, what are you laughing at? What are mm-hmm. you smiling at? He's like, well, you sounded like Amazov there.
Yeah.
And you sounded like Picard. And then he says, Ensign Hickman in astrophysics does a pretty good Janeway. And she's like, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to have a talk with him.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about
you thought about me.
Impersonations you do. I'm sure they wrote the impersonation thing in because you were always doing your Janeway imitation.
Probably so. Yes. And my video reaction also deals with that. So I do talk about that.
We're on the same page.
We are on the same page. So Janeway then talks about how she feels like she's alone. Chakotay says she's not. They're going to face everything together. And then for all the JC shippers, good Lord, that final line from Janeway, 3 years ago, I didn't even know your name. Today, I can't imagine a day without you. I mean, that to me.
They're like nose to nose. And she puts her hand on his heart.
Yes.
Like, and leans in and puts, I mean, come on, writers. You know what you were doing.
They sure were. They were going there again. They're just teasing all the Janeway Chakotay fans. They are teasing them.
Okay, so we're back on the bridge.
Yes, we are. Yes, and according to Tuvok, power signatures of the Borg vessels have terminated. And now the audience is thinking, what the heck? What's going on? We head over there to the location of the cubes, the last location. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the Borg cubes have been absolutely decimated. And Harry's very happy about this. He's like, oh my gosh, we may have found our way through Borg space via an ally. You know, Janeway's like, hold your horses, Harry. You know, that's not necessarily we've got to figure out what's going on first. And that's when Harry detects some bio readings coming from the hull of one of the Borg cubes, and it's some kind of ship or something. But there's no response to hail
signatures. They say
that's right.
Yeah, and one of them's unknown. You pick up the bio reading. We magnify that on the view screen, and
there's
like,
this cylindrical looking ship. Yeah, something.
We don't even know if it's an alien, like a giant alien, or if it's a ship or a weapon.
We don't know anything. What it is? Yeah, no response to hail. Can't beam it aboard.
It's a bio signature. Mm-hmm. It's not a ship. It's not reading as technology of any kind.
Correct. It's reading as biological. Correct. Yeah. So we can't beam it aboard. We can't tractor beam it. So it's impervious to everything. Mm-hmm. And Janeway now has the bright idea to ask Chakotay to head down to the cube, take a team so that he can have a short range scan of this biomass. And of course he takes Tuvok and Kim. Kim doesn't really want to go. Kim wants to stay on the bridge, but Kim goes.
Yes, they go. And I had the same thing. I was like, really, Katie?
Not again.
Not again. Another decision like this. Anyway, we're on the cube.
Yeah.
By the way, I noticed it was unusually dark on the bridge when we were in red alert. It was
hard to see
Kate's face sometimes. It was,
really?
For me, it just felt unusually dark. And then when we come on the Borg queue, I felt the same way. I felt like, I don't know if the light meter was off or something, but it looked dark to me. Maybe
can I ask you, could you have been your TV? Because when I was watching the Borg cube scenes, I thought this is way too bright. I thought they could make this darker. Yes, because I kind of felt like, you know, if these Borg cubes have been decimated, there should be little or no light source that it should have been our, because remember, all of us are wearing our Sims beacons. And I kept thinking, why are we wearing Sims beacons? You can see everything so clearly. So it's your TV.
Maybe
it's,
I'll look at that.
Yeah. Check.
Everybody
take a look
check
that.
Your TVs if you think it's too dark. It might be that, or it might just be that it's too dark.
Yeah, maybe. But it's not as dark as like a Game of Thrones final episode dark like that. No. Very creepy inside here.
Do you remember this set, by the way?
Was it a big set
or a small set?
It was a medium-sized set. What I did not agree with after I watched it compared to after reading the script is when Harry sees the mangled Borg bodies, like he sees the actual
going through the halls. There are Borg still working.
Yeah.
I think Tuvok or Chakotay or somebody says
Tuvok.
Tuvok says, you know, don't draw your weapons and we won't be a threat and they'll leave us alone. So the Borg are trying to repair their ship and their robots are walking around and we just kind of walk right by these zombies. And it is very creepy. It feels like a haunted house. But they come around a corner and then Harry finds this stack of Borg bodies. That's very, it was very cool.
Well, let me just talk about this. I remember very clearly reading this script. And in the script, it says Harry sees a mountain of Borg corpses.
Oh, no.
In this, that we come into this large, like, cargo bay area. And mountain meaning, remember, in a prior episode, when all those Borg from the cube were net down on the planet, we registered 80,000, the episode you directed, we registered 80,000 life forms, right? So you're talking about 80,000 Borg on one cube, and in this room there was supposed to be like 1,000 Borg stacked up into this huge mountain.
This looks like
12, right? Whatever, a small tops. And so I just felt that didn't correlate with the script. I thought, yes, that would have been so much more scarier if Harry, because Harry's sort of taken aback. My reaction is like, like, you know, I'm shocked, and I'm not going to be shocked by seeing 12 mangled Borg bodies. I'm going to be shocked by seeing 1,000, 5,000 bodies stacked like a mountain where I'm looking up at it like, oh, my God. And that's what it was written. That's how it was written in the script. But then when visual effects got a hold of it, it changed. It clearly was just this little tiny mole.
It was probably too expensive to do a visual effects shot like that. And they clearly just built a prop, you know, just had wardrobe or makeup or whatever, you know, create a stack of six or whatever, whatever it was.
But hugely disappointing.
I'm sure it came down to money on that.
Yeah, it had to have been a money issue. And it bummed me out because when I saw the final product, and even when we were filming, I was talking to David. I was like, David, so my eye line is kind of, I'm just looking dead ahead, but in the script, I'm really looking at a mountain of Borg. He's like, and he says, yeah, but because of where we're shooting, like, I think he made some justification for it. So I changed my eye line when we were filming, and the end result is not as effective as if I saw thousands of them, you know, stacked on top of each other. Then you're really going to go, oh my gosh, you know, it adds to, because this whole beginning of this episode, every scene is really to set up how powerful these aliens are compared to the Borg, right? And when you see 6 to 12 stacked up bodies, that's not that it's not that big of a deal, right? So
do you remember, I noticed in this, in the hallways here, there was a ton of liquid nitrogen, the smoke that comes through. Do you remember, because I know when I was on sets like that, you'd walk through the liquid nitrogen and it was freezing
cold.
Do you remember it being, this looked especially cold.
Like, yeah, they had tons so of, much of it. Oh my gosh, they had tons of they have liquid nitrogen, they had smoke, they had a, you name it, it was all over the place. I don't specifically remember walking through it and freezing my butt off, but I'm sure that did happen. For
Well, it's also when you're walking, you know, through the liquid nitrogen, you can't see what's on the other side. It's like a cloud, and so you know, it's
it's like a curtain. It's a curtain of liquid nitrogen. You can't see.
I always felt a little nervous, you know, walking through those things because you don't, especially if there's debris and things you could trip on or you know, extras. Well, I also remember when we were shooting this stuff. That this was a big Borg build for the makeup department, and I remember they brought in like extra makeup artists, and there was a lot of hubbub around all the Borg makeup that had to be done and getting everybody ready. That was hard scheduling because it took hours to get the people, you know, everybody in Borg stuff.
Definitely.
And if you had, I don't know how many extras we had, but let's say we had 10 Borg or 12 or whatever.
You'd need probably another, you need another 10 to 20 more makeup artists really working on these guys.
And timing it so that everybody's ready when you need them is very hard. So
very difficult.
I do remember there was a lot more manpower working to get all these Borg people ready.
Yes, you're right about that. So after passing the mountain of Borg corpses, we detect this biomass that it's basically dissolved through it's dissolved through the hull. And a drone is trying to assimilate it, but it's not working. Another scene to show the power of these aliens, because earlier the doctor said that those Borg tubules can go through anything, any energy field, any type of metal, nothing can stop it. But clearly this is not working for the Borg drone. The tubules are not even doing anything to it. They're bouncing off, basically. Chakotay then detects a high concentration of antimatter particles. So he realizes there's some type of warp propulsion system beyond the point where he's standing at. And Harry asks, it's a ship? Tuvok says, well, Starfleet has encountered species that use organic-based vessels, like the Breen, for example. And then it made me think of Voyager. We kind of have, you know, we have bioneural gel packs. So we have organic-based elements to our ship. And then there's other sci-fi series like Farscape. The Farscape ship is completely, it's organic as well. So there's a lot of usage of this organic idea.
And it's funny on Resident Alien, the ship is organic and kind of connected to the Alan Tudyk character, the alien Harry.
There you
It's connected. It appears and disappears and it's all connected to, on Resident Alien, the idea that octopus that live in water are aliens. That's sort of where the alien is kind of based and connected to. And that somehow the Alan Tudyk alien is connected to the octopus here on Earth.
Yeah.
And they go, their DNA is connected somehow.
Right.
So his spaceship is kind of like an octopus spaceship, you know, organic based thing.
Oh yeah.
So it's
cool idea though. I love that.
Very
idea.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So now, you know, Chakotay then tells Harry that he's gonna, well, he gets permission first from Janeway. Can I enter this bio vessel? And she agrees. And then Chakotay orders Harry to work on downloading the Borg tactical database, which we end up using later, through a nearby Borg distribution node. So once Chakotay and Tuvok enter this alien vessel, what did it look like to you? That cockpit, did it give you anything? I'm gonna tell you what it did for me, but I'm gonna see what you thought.
All I have to say when they go in this organic vessel is, this was a fail to me.
I felt like
it looked like wood and paint and the cheesy spider webs with party lights. It felt like something from the original series to me. I was like, really? Like, we're doing Borg and somebody even scarier than the Borg, and you're putting party lights in behind some wood and plaster? This was a fail to me. Glad we didn't spend much time there, because I was like, ew. Okay, what is it?
For me, it didn't, you know, I let it go. I was like, this is 1997, 1998. It's fine. I'm not going to get too pulled out by this. But my immediate thought process, because the seat for the pilot, it's huge, right? It's a big chair, right?
Yeah.
Because clearly A472 is like 12 feet tall or whatever. And so when I saw that interior, all I could think about it were the various crashed alien vessels from the Aliens film franchise. They show an alien that is massive, or at least a dead alien, you know, sitting in a chair or whatever.
Right.
That's huge. And it's the same. It was the same feeling. I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of, I'm getting an alien vibe from this film franchise Alien.
Interesting.
I can see that.
I just feel like the execution of building the set, the materials used were so familiar to like Home Depot or it just felt
the lights, but the party lights pulled you out.
The party lights,
they pulled you out.
Oh,
that's okay. That's all right. But we're only been there for seconds, though.
We're not in there for that long. I get why they didn't want to spend
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We do notice there is damage on one wall from a Borg disruptor beam that Tuvok says it's actually regenerating itself, which once again is another example of showing the audience how amazing these new aliens are. Like you can shoot them, but they're going to self, you know, you can shoot their ships, but they will basically repair themselves. They don't even have to have a crew repairing them, which, you know, who has that technology? No one. So very, very interesting. And then we cut out to the Borg distribution node where Harry starts hearing some weird type of creature sounds. Yeah. It's like, kind of like that first, remember Lost, the TV series?
Yes. When in the very, watching it right now.
Oh, well, the beginning season when they first hear that, that sound, it's the same kind of, you know, scary creature sound that you don't know what's going on. It's so you're classic. Watching it now?
Yeah, I'm watching. I never watched it originally.
So wow.
We're like halfway through the series. So Harry's hears this animal sound over by the node, the data node or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's a classic horror movie moment of like, oh, you've the young guy's wandered off all by himself in the scary haunted house. Like I was like, oh, this is classic. And now you start making your way around down the hall. And I got to give you props here. Yeah. You were trying to make some tactical moves. Like I saw you sort of turning and checking your back and
thank you,
using the light. You were, and in fact, in a moment, you're going to rejoin Chakotay and Tuvok moving down the halls.
Yeah.
And you continue to make these tactical
moves.
Yeah. Tactical moves. They're not doing it. They're just walking in front. And that's a moment where I was like, dang, I wish we had had a technical advisor.
Or you went, dang, Garrett was the only one that was thinking about this that day. All right. So I get a gold star, basically.
You get a gold star, yes. Okay. You were doing some tactical moves.
There. This is where Kes drops the tray. Okay. So yes, now.
Because she sees you scream.
Yep.
She has a vision where she sees you scream. Yes. Yep. This is where she drops the tray.
Yeah. Right. The tray goes down.
I have it right there. Mm-hmm. She drops the tray.
This is the tray drop.
A screaming flash, and we go to the bridge because Kes says, you know, Harry's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the bridge, and the doctor calls Janeway and says, you got to get him out of there.
Yeah. Beam him out.
B'Elanna tries. She can't get a lock.
Right.
Whatever is closing in on them is blocking their signal. Something, you know, whatever the 8472, we don't know their name yet, but that's blocking the signal. And she keeps trying. You hear the transporter sound start, and then it switches to like, meh, it's not working.
Right. And then that's when she suggests a skeletal lock, which nobody has ever done before in the history of Starfleet. So.
There's a couple of, a couple of problems. She suggests a skeletal lock that she can target the minerals in their
bone tissue.
Bone tissue.
I've never heard of bone called tissue, but that's cool. Okay.
And then she says, I just came up with it. So first of all, the whole concept is so transformative that I just don't buy that, like, no one's ever thought of it. And she just happened to come up with it when we need it. And second of all, Roxanne's delivery of it is so casual. I'm like, you just changed the nature of transporting people in the universe. And you're like, I just came up with it.
Hey, that's just how she is. She's a cool customer.
She's pretty good.
She's pretty dang good, your future wife. So
it was a weird moment.
I hear you. Mm-hmm. So she does, the lock does work and they're beaming out, but that's not before Harry gets struck by 8472. 8472 comes in.
8472 for the first time. CG alien. CG. It's a scary 12-foot alien. And we see it and I'm like, meh, it's okay. It's the CG is like... Oh no, it's the CG again. The CG at the I feel like less is more. Like if we just seen flashes of it by in front.
And, yeah.
You know, I don't know.
It's, oh, I hear you. So you wanted to see less of it, more in the shadow. I want to see less of it. Okay.
Because...
All right. Let me talk about the filming of this particular scene when Harry gets struck. So the first moment you see 8472 actually burst into this chamber area and sees two Borg drones and knocks them out of the way. So when 8472 shows up, he kind of bursts through. It looks like he burst through a bulkhead or something because a bunch of debris comes out. Okay. Yeah. And that was, they put all that debris into that cannon, that big round cannon that they use on set. And they just shoot all this stuff out with high velocity. And it's kind of dangerous, I think. So I remember filming with that cannon and they would have to shoot that thing off. And to do a second take, they had to reload the cannon with all the same debris that was shot out before and reshoot it out. And I remember thinking, man, I just don't want to be anywhere in line with the line of fire of that cannon, because it came out with such velocity. I was a little surprised by it. I'm like, holy moly. And then, you know, as A472 knocks down the drones and then turns towards me. And then, of course, I'm not seeing A472. And really, it was up to my imagination to sort of visualize what this thing was. And you know, we got a few tips of like, okay, it's about this tall, kind of looks like this, but I don't think they had really completely fleshed out the CGI of it. Yeah, no. And at that point, they hadn't had it done yet. So it was really up to my imagination. And my image was different from what you finally see in the end product. Yeah. I had a different image of 8472. Definitely than what they had. I had it actually taller than what they had represented, you know. But then being hit by it and getting knocked down, and then I scream. It just reminded me of that scream from the pilot episode when we're getting that needle going into cavity chest. I'm like, oh my gosh, did they just reuse that footage? So
here's what I wondered when it busts through and knocks down the Borg and then knocks you down and hits you and, you know, injures you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, why doesn't it have a weapon or anything? Like, it has nothing. It's like hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
In a way that, I guess because they're invincible.
Yeah, they don't even need a weapon. They're that amazing. So
yeah, but there was something about it that I was just like, oh, it seems like they would have weapon, or it's just literally a naked, unclothed alien without a weapon, no technology, no clothing, no. Yeah.
I hear you. For as advanced as they are, you would think, number one, they would have clothing, right? They wouldn't just be naked, at which they are. And number two, wouldn't they have, since they're at battle, wouldn't they maybe have some type of, you know, some protective gear as well? But I guess if they're that powerful, they don't need it. And weapons, if they're that powerful, they don't need it. That's probably what it is.
That was the concept, but something about seeing this beast fighting hand to hand just felt very primitive to me.
I hear you. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It's sort of combining. And so it's a bit of an uncanny valley thing for you, where you're seeing a very primitive beast, but yet he comes from a very advanced race. Yes. Yeah. So it's like, whoa, it's a weird combination of elements for sure.
By the way, just before the alien busts in, I think Chakotay says 5 meters in closing or something like that. And then you say, you step in front of them from where?
Yeah.
I'm like, why did you step out?
Cause that's what Livingston made me do.
I didn't want to step out.
I was like, no, I would have stayed exactly where I was. And I would have shouldered my phaser rifle at that point. I've been ready for the danger, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go towards the danger. I mean, what am I doing? But for that shot to work, I was directed to step out, and I was like, okay, you know,
bumpy.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. So now we're beamed back. And now the bioship is powering up weapons. Okay. So Tom is the one that detects that the bioship is powering up weapons. Janeway's like, get us out of here. And it shoots twice. The first time the energy pulse misses. And the second time.
Yes, it shoots twice. They shoot us with a lightning bolt.
Yes.
Look like a lightning bolt.
Yes.
First lightning bolt goes past us.
Right.
And then they shoot us with another lightning bolt.
Right.
And it hits the ship.
The shields, and it kind of flops us over is what it does, right?
The ship starts tumbling. It's rolling.
Yes.
And by the way, so when we cut to the bridge and that's happening, the lightning bolt hit us and now we're rolling.
Yeah.
And they have all these angles that are, sure, they're cool, but I feel like we should have had something where the ship is upside down, where people are flying through the air. Like we should have had some stunt people dropping or airborne, like, because that's what should have happened. It just didn't feel, it felt like we were doing our normal ship shakes, just extreme version. But if they're going to show the ship literally tumbling like this and we've, you know, and people are flying around, then we've lost gravimetric control. We should be airborne. You know what I mean?
But not only that, if you recall the opening scene with the two Borg cubes, the same lightning bolt just destroys their cube. Right. So really that lightning bolt should have went through our stupid shields easily.
Oh, yeah.
Like butter. Like we should have lost half of our ship off of that hit. If these guys are as powerful as they say, our Starfleet shields shouldn't have been anything to that. That lightning bolt. Okay. So that was a big question mark. But what was cool from that scene is Tom is actually on the floor as he punches in commands to go to warp. Yeah. I thought, look at that. Tom's crawling and he's barely like, and then we kind of level off and shoot all away. And,
yeah. From the floor, he reaches up and saves the whole ship with one handed. That's how good he is.
I just want to thank you for saving
us.
You're
welcome.
Okay. I'm in bad shape, but I'm still happy and thankful, even though I'm in bad shape.
Yeah, you're in bad shape. We'll really get to that shape in a minute.
Yeah.
Kes can hear the thoughts.
Yeah.
He has another flash. She said, I could hear the alien pilot's thoughts. Mm-hmm. By the way, she says, yes, I've been having these premonitions for a while. I was like, what?
Why don't you share that with us?
Why don't you tell like, maybe you should have shared that before you decided the Borg body pile was the first time you were going to share it. That's what I was talking about before. Like the first time we see her, it's the Borg pile of bodies. But if she's been having these thoughts, hearing voices, like maybe you should have shared that with us. Anyway, she says to Janeway, by the way, she says, it's not the Borg that you should be afraid of. It's them.
Mm-hmm.
That they said, the weak will perish.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's how we go out.
Are you sure that's what they said?
The weak will perish.
Are you sure they didn't say the weak will perish?
Maybe. Well, Paris did just save the ship. So okay. we come back from the commercial break, even though there's no commercials when we watch it.
Right.
But we come back and we're in sick bay. Mm. And Harry on the surgical bed in sick bay. And Harry, as you see him, the shot of him, you see that he's got lots of mustard on his face. Is what it looks like. It looks like he's got a bunch of mustard.
That was part CGI, not all CGI. Okay. So the part that's going into my mouth and the one coming out of my nose are actual pieces that the makeup department kind of glued on, those tendrils, right? And I actually kept those well after this episode. I stuck them onto the mirror in my trailer.
Couple of things.
Oh,
too.
Come now.
You got a couple.
Oh yeah, I have one tiny tendril. You have two complete Starfleet uniforms. I'll gladly trade you for that. But yes, so those were real. Okay, coming out, and I just love the doctor's line after he says the infection is spreading, and he says, "Mr. Kim is being eaten alive." Yes. That line to me was really. It made me laugh quite a bit.
Spreading. Mm-hmm. You've got mustard all over your face.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. I feel like you've mentioned this before. Were you on the chopping block? Harry was a possible, like, do you think they put you in this jeopardy because Harry, like they were going to get rid of somebody to bring Seven of Nine on? Did you feel in jeopardy or are you aware?
Nope. And that's on the internet everywhere that, you know, it was going to be either Harry or Kes. Those are the, you know, one of those characters is going to be eliminated, you know, and no, Harry was never, ever on the chopping block. Except, you know, I had my issues with tardiness and what happened to me, you know, being late. And I was given a time to kind of correct that. So never once was I ever afraid of being on the chopping block. Not at all. Okay. But what we learn about the alien cells, they are so dense. Each cell contains 100 times the DNA of a human cell, and it would take the doctor eons to figure out how to really
says years.
You know, to years, right?
Years to decode this.
Right, but he does and figure he out says, a plan.
He says, you know, these things, this DNA, this 8472, this alien DNA is so strong mm-hmm. that resistance in this case is far from futile.
Futile, yes, that's
now,
right.
Why did they give him all the cool lines?
He gets all the cool lines. He does, son of a gun.
They always give the doctor the cool lines. But he does say here, these Borg nanoprobes may be the solution.
Yeah.
Of that autopsy he was doing and dissecting, and he's got this DNA from the mustard on Harry's face, and so he's putting them together, kind of going, all right, maybe we can modify the Borg nanoprobes to work.
Yeah, yeah. And the modification, it's a lot of science, but it makes total sense, because anything that kind of enters into this 8472 cell gets eliminated immediately. Like there's nothing that, because the doctor already tried to give me something, a sedative, all that stuff to calm me down or to at least stop my pain, but he can't, because everything has been every time he tries a different thing to help me, it's automatically stopped dead in its tracks by this incredibly dense cells of the 8472. But then he realizes if he can take these Borg nanoprobes and reprogram the probe to emit the same electrochemical signature as an alien 8472 cell. Now, once these nanoprobes are introduced into Harry's system, the alien cells will recognize them as their own. So they're not going to mess with them. So that is the way that the nanoprobes will then latch on to each cell and then win the battle, because it'll be too late for that cell to defend itself, because it thinks that nanoprobe is one of its fellow cells. So really, really cool science here, makes sense. And Janeway then says in a whispered tone, fight it, Harry, that's an order. And
it was very sweet.
Yes. Yeah,
and her line there and just the situation that was really, really sweet.
Did you see my single tear?
No, I didn't.
What?
Did you have a single tear?
Yes.
Oh,
people have asked me at conventions if that was CGI. I was like, no. I was like, that was my one tear, because Janeway's talking to me and I have no, I have no way to talk back to her. And as an actor, I kept thinking, what am I going to do in this situation? I have no lines. You know, she's going to say this, they're going to cut to me, and that's going to be the last image of this particular scene is her POV of me lying on that bio bed. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go through this gamut of emotions of, like, you know, embarrassment of having to be on this bio bed and now not being able to do my job, you know, because, you know, being on a starship and you're the main crew, you're part of a team. And now that I'm not there, the person taking my place is not going to be as proficient as I am or as knowledgeable as I am. So now the team has a vulnerability or a weakness. So again, so I'm using these thoughts while I'm lying on this bio bed, like I'm letting her down, you know, and then her saying, fight it, Harry, that's an order, just pushes me over the edge. And the tear, you know, I get emotional basically on that bio bed. So I need you to watch that. I can't believe you didn't see my tear.
I didn't see the tear.
That's huge.
I was so overwhelmed with the moment and just the whole totality of it that I missed the tear.
No, yeah, because it's literally, she's looking at me, my eyes are open, and she says, fight it, Harry, that's an order. And that's when I just close my eyes and just like, oh God. And that one tear just falls out. And it's
beautiful.
Yeah. So it's a really touching moment, I think.
Awesome.
And you missed it, but I'm all right, but you're gonna watch it later.
I'm gonna watch it.
Thank you.
The bridge, we actually first
engineering.
Yep. Yeah, we go to engineering from there, and
Torres has analyzed the Borg tactical database that Harry basically gave his life for. And the Borg referred to the aliens as species 8472, and in 12 or so attacks, the Borg have been just defeated quickly. You know, there hasn't been much resistance. To 8472.
Resistance is not futile.
And they we learned that they come from a quantum singularity and that they are traveling through the Northwest Passage, as nicknamed by Chakotay. And there are over 130 of these 8472 vessels that are detected, and more are coming through this quantum singularity. Kes can hear them. They intend on destroying everything.
She said, all I can hear is malevolence and hatred.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they're so
they
angry.
Want to destroy everything. Basically, they're just like, screw this. We're going to come in and just destroy. We're going to come through these little anomalies or whatever.
Right.
and we're going to just destroy everything.
Right. And at this point, we have no clue where they're from. We're like, okay, they're coming through this quantum singularity, but where? Beta quadrant, gamma quadrant, elsewhere in the delta quadrant, or someplace not even in one of the quadrants, right? Yeah. So we don't know what's going on. Are we in Janeway's ready room next?
Yeah, we go to the ready room, and Janeway and Chakotay basically discuss options.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Janeway's like, should we keep going? Should we move forward and maybe certain death? Should we just give up and turn around? And Chakotay basically says, look, you're exhausted. You haven't slept in days. And there's a shot of them in the scene where she's like, I just don't know what to do. And she sort of leans on the rail.
Yeah.
He comes up behind her and sort of leans on the rail right next to her real close.
Oh, wow.
He says, you know, you should rest. You really should.
I didn't notice that. It was a
rail moment. It was a Kuchimoya moment. There really was. There's a lot
does
of
Chakotay,
that.
Does Chakotay give good rail? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. It's nice.
There's a lot of
it's
what?
It's romantic.
It's romantic. Okay. Yeah. It's a romantic rail.
Yeah. So she, you know, he says rest and he leaves. And then we cut to the shot of the ship. And then we go to Janeway again. Maybe it's my TV, but it seemed dark. She's lying in bed for a second and she pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what she's just thought of. And then the next thing we see, she's on the holodeck. She's gone to see Da Vinci again.
That's right.
And he's staring at the wall. He's staring and he's like, what do you see? And she says, a wall.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, a wall, but what else? And he's looking at the shadow and he can see a lot of things.
Oh, he sees everything. He lists like,
a bunch of things.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. Blacksmith or this or that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Birds in the trees.
Yeah.
Or something. Starlings, I think he says. And he basically is talking and he talks about watching water hit a rock.
Yeah.
He could just get lost in water hitting a rock.
Mm-hmm.
He can get lost basically in his imagination and find inspiration if he just kind of lets his mind open up a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So she poses this question to him about going forward into certain death. What should I do? Should I go forward where I'm going to die, like, and everybody's going to die? Or do I retreat and give up and save my people? I don't know what to do. And he's like, maybe you should pray. Maybe, you know, what I do sometimes is I pray and I have to take this manuscript. He says to the monks, why don't you come with me? And, you know, we can talk to the abbot and we can pray together and ask, you know, make a deal with God, basically.
Yeah, he says we can appeal to God.
God. And then in that moment, she's like, wait a minute.
Or light bulb.
Bing. I could make a deal with a devil.
Appeal to the devil. Yes. Mm-hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
So we know that she's thought of an idea. And in this case, the devil is probably the Borg.
That's right.
And then we go to the briefing room and everybody's standing up in the briefing room, by the way.
Yeah.
And I feel like this staging was inspired by the Alan Craker run that we had. You know, Alan Craker came on this season and Marvin Rush loved working with Alan. And I have a feeling that this was inspired because it's got some of that Janeway, you know, Paris comes over with the first line, hands off to a two shot with Janeway. Then she walks around and hands off to another line. And then there's one cut back on B'Elanna, I think.
Yeah.
And then Janeway walks around again. So there's a lot of efficiency and movement in the staging.
I agree. And I don't think it was Marvin. I think it was David watching Alan's episode.
I think he saw the episode.
Yeah, I'm going to do my version of that. He was like, hey, why didn't I think of that? I'm supposed to be the cutting edge director here. Yeah. So why don't I? So I think that's what, you know, kind of
interesting.
Happened. Yeah, I do. Because, you know, I mean, David's a big nerd himself. He likes sci-fi. So I think he watched every episode
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
But Janeway basically is saying in this cool scene, we're talking about how he shot it. But in the scene itself, she's like, let's make a deal with a Borg.
Mm-hmm.
And Doc, we're going to store all of this information about these nanoprobes and what we can give. The deal we're going to make is we'll give the Borg a way to defeat these guys if the Borg let us go through their space so we can get away from all this mess.
Mm-hmm. And if they try to pull any funny business, then we will delete your program where we've stored your everything.
Runs right past that a bit. Like,
well, did you look at Picardo's face when she said that? I mean, he's like, he played it really well. It was subtle, but it was like, oh crap. It was the old crap look, like, delete me. Like he you could see that he registered that.
She lays that out, dismisses everybody. And then it's just her and Chakotay. And so far in this episode, we've seen like, a lot of foreplay and lovey-doveyness and all kinds of stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
But in this scene, Chakotay's like, I don't agree. Like, I don't like your decision.
It's too risky. It's too risky.
And he tells this long story about the fox and the scorpion, which is basically scorpion needs to get across the water and give me a ride. And the fox is like, you're going to bite me. And the scorpion's like, no, I won't bite you. And then the scorpion gets a ride, bites him halfway over. And the fox is like, why'd you do that? Because it's in my nature.
Yeah. It's because this is what I do. Yeah.
This is what I do. I'm a scorpion. I do what scorpions do.
And hence the name of the episode.
Exactly. I just felt like, honestly, that fable, that, fairy tale whatever, fable, is so familiar. I wish that they had shortened it. Like, I feel like I told it in about 10-12 seconds, and I feel like Chakotay's version goes on for like 2.5 minutes, and I'm just like, I know where this is going, just like finish your story.
Yeah, for an English speaking audience, but for people that are watching in other countries, maybe not.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? And this is a worldwide show. We have fans worldwide. It's not just US and UK, you know, they get this, right?
I don't know. Something about the storytelling, and I love Robert, and often, you know, almost always I'm amazed with what he does. But this is one where I was like, I feel like the story.
Pick it up. Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
Let's get through the story.
I was surprised that they've spent that much time on it. I'm like my goodness. Yeah.
Wandering around and, all that. So
I do want to bring one thing up before he goes into this story. When everyone is still in the room, Janeway says, lay in a course for the closest Borg cube so we can go make this deal. Yeah. And that's when you say, yes, ma'am. But it's the most serious yes, ma'am of all that you've that's ever been uttered from Tom Paris's mouth.
Interesting.
Now, it's usually very, yes, ma'am. But this time, because we're up against the Borg and also, you know, crazy 8472, you're like, yes, ma'am. Like your concerned yes, ma'am came out, which we never hear.
Nice.
Okay, I just want to throw that out there. You're welcome.
Thank you. It was a very, you can't just throw away a yes, ma'am.
No, you did. You did the right yes, ma'am for this moment.
Has a purpose and a meaning.
It sure does. Okay, we're on the bridge now.
By the way, at the end of this Fox and the Scorpion story,
yes, go ahead.
They get into an argument.
Oh, that's right. And
he's like, at one point, he goes, "It's wrong," and he yells at her. And I was like, "Whoa, you guys were just having romance rail, and now you know, and lovey-dovey, touching hearts, and they're fighting." Sad to see. Yeah. It feels like this is the end of their, from a writer's point of view, like they have a breakdown and a disagreement in a way that it does feel like it's the end of their relationship. Mm. And she even has a line where she says, I wrote it down, where she says, well, he says, sorry, first he says, sometimes you don't know when to take a step back after he's yelled at her.
You don't know when,
And she says, the time for debate is over. I've decided.
Yeah.
Like she's the captain. She's decided. And they're going to do it. And he walks off. And at the very end of the scene, she says, I guess I am alone after all, which is what he had promised, you're not alone, earlier.
Right.
But I felt like there was not just this story breakdown going on, you know, of the fight, but I felt like in a weird way, they'd revisited this romance in a couple of scenes, but she does realize in the end that she's gotta stay solo, that she cannot romantically or in any way team up, hook up, romance up with anybody. Yeah. And I feel like it'll be interesting as we get into season 4 episodes to see if they revisit this at all, or if this was really the end for Janeway in her head. I'm done. I am alone. I got to stay alone. I got to stay a captain. That's what
she looked
like.
Yeah. She looked like she was about to shed a tear. Yeah. You know, there was a bit of emotional vulnerability at that very end. And it does seem like the end of something, you know, at least. Let's jump to the bridge.
We see this Borg vessel. They put a tractor lock. They scan us.
Yep.
By the way, with that green light, which I don't know if that was real green light or if it was like a VisiFect or something. I don't know. As it scanned across. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was hard to tell. If it was VisiFect, I thought that was really good, actually, because it looked very 3D. That's a hard thing to physically accomplish with a
laser. Might have been practical. It might have been on set, though. It might have been, yeah.
I think that's cool. If Marvin and David Livingston could have come up with a way to do that. I thought it played really cool.
It did. Yeah. And then the Borg vessel then puts a tractor beam on us.
Tractor lock. And she's like, hey, I want to make a deal. They're basically like, nah, we don't make deals.
Yeah, deals are irrelevant because it's true. Right. If we're gonna simulate you, we're going to know what you know. So it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, deals are irrelevant. Yeah. Exactly. That's what they say. And she's like, send them over a sample of the data that, you know, the doctor's research on these, you know, nanoprobes.
Yeah.
And she sends it over. She's in the middle of laying out what her terms of the deals are going to be. And then she starts to beam over, beam off the bridge.
They beam her into the cube.
They beam her right in the middle of the cube. And I gotta say, this was a fail for me. This green screen of Janeway in this giant Borg cube. I get what they were trying to do, but I felt like the angles, and I'm surprised David Livingston usually pushes for very unconventional dynamic angles. I felt like it was the most down the middle version of, it's just a wide shot with her in the VisiFect shot where she's tiny. And then her close up, it's like we had been dark for so much of this episode, dark and dramatic and theatrical. And then we get in the most dramatic and theatrical set, this giant Borg cube where she's beamed into. It's like a bright white light on her. It's almost like my ring light, you know? It was like her face was too bright for the space. It was just a close up like this. I feel like it should have been moving. There should have been some drama. There should have been multiple angles instead of just one sort of medium down the middle close up. I just felt like this failed for me. She's in the middle. Our captain is in the middle of a bridge in this giant Borg cube. It just didn't feel as dynamic as it should have been, honestly.
Budget concerns, again, maybe. Right? Restraints.
It's the last episode of the season. So if we had been over budget for any of the episodes earlier, I'm sure the studio was saying, you've got to finish this episode on budget for the season. And if, you know, we may have spent all our money in earlier episodes, because this one didn't seem
threshold.
Crazily.
Maybe we spent it all on threshold, you know?
Maybe it was all on threshold, exactly.
Okay.
But anyway, she's in the Borg cube. It's cool. Yeah. Her performance is cool. And I love the idea of the collective sort of talking to her on this cube as she stands in this very cool spot. But she's, so she's talking about what the deal could be. And it feels like the Borg are about to agree to this. Like, it feels like she's succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's suddenly a violent shake.
Yep.
And she does the classic Cape Mulgrew swing at the hips and flop back up. It was a funny, everybody's got their own shake technique. It was a classic Kate shake technique on that one.
I don't think Kim Friedman would have given that a 10.0. I think she would have gotten that a low number. That shake
that would
was
have been a lower
not,
number. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she did her shake on the Borg cube and came back up. And the bioships are attacking.
There's one that attacks that Borg cube and then it goes past it, right? And then more bioships show up
and they form this like starburst thing.
Oh, yes. They form into that crazy, that circular formation where all of their energy goes together and then shoots out as one. Yes, very cool. I love that.
That was very cool.
And that blows the whole planet.
Destroy the planet.
Yeah.
All the Borg cubes in the vicinity are also destroyed, except for the one that's holding on to Janeway and Voyager.
Right. The shockwave kind of pushes that cube away, right? And that's what we see the end of that episode is bye-bye.
We see the cube flying out into space and it's still holding Voyager on with its tractor beam. So we know Captain's inside the cube. That Borg ship took off and it's got Voyager with it. So,
great cliffhanger, you know?
Cliffhanger. Yeah. Voyager meets Borg, 8472 or worse. Run, fight, watch part 2. That's the haiku.
Wow, you bookended this recap and discussion with your haiku. That's wonderful.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's your
I was going to ask you the same thing. Theme.
We're on the same page. You're twinsies.
Yeah, we're twinsies. You go first. You're my elder, so I'll let you go first.
You're funny. My theme is it's in the realm of making a deal with the devil. Like, what will it take for someone to make a deal with the devil? And all of us have to face that question sometimes. I think that's the lesson, is like, what would you be willing to make a deal with the devil to do? Like, how bad would things have to be? Mm-hmm. And in this case, things got to that place for Janeway. She was willing to make a deal with the devil. So I guess that's sort of the theme. I think I can relate to that.
Well, my lesson is going to be more of a funny lesson, and that is, when told to go on an away mission to a Borg cube,
yes,
immediately say that you have a stomach ache or that you have the runs, something like that, and you cannot go. That's the lesson.
Yes. I think that's a good lesson. That's better than mine.
Okay.
Don't go on a Borg cube.
Don't go on a Borg cube. Get a stomach ache. Just have a stomach ache.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Well, all righty.
That was fun.
That was a good episode.
I can't believe it. We made it to the end of season three. Congratulations.
Unbelievable. Congratulations, sir. All right, guys. Stay tuned next week when Robbie and I will complete the Scorpion, not even a trilogy, the Scorpion saga with the part two version of Scorpion. We'll be reviewing part two and figuring out if Harry Kim makes it through and if Voyager is okay. So join us next week when we do that. Thanks a lot, guys, for tuning in for this week.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Harry, what's up, buddy? I came to visit you. You know, I had to ask you, a really important question.
What?
Yeah. I can barely hear you, but okay. Anyway, what's that on your face, by the way?
Mustard.
Oh.
And relish.
Yeah.
And linguine.
You really look like a mess. Did Neelix throw a plate of barbecue, lunch at your face? Did you get in a fight with Neelix or something?
You're so funny. I can't even laugh. Am I making you hungry?
Yeah, you actually are. I think I'm going to go to mess hall and grab a hot dog with some all the fixins.
Okay.
All right. I'll see you later. Feel better there, buddy. You wash your face.
Thank you.